These are the Wisdom 1.0 Retreat Dhamma Talks from our Spring 2016 residential retreat held at the Wan Dharma Center in Claverack, New York. We were in residence from May 19th to May 22nd, 2016. I have edited out the initial individual introductions as they are too personal for public distribution. Other than this edit, the recordings chronicle this most remarkable retreat as the retreat unfolded. Our retreat was remarkable on many fronts, including the setting. The Wan Dharma Center provides a spacious and beautiful natural setting, very comfortable and quiet rooms, and delicious but simple food. The staff is attentive and supporting without being intrusive. The Sangha that came together were all uniquely remarkable in their own developing understanding and pure and honest diversity. Collectively, our retreat Sangha showed true compassion and deep wisdom in their attentiveness to the teachings and gentle and mindful presence with each other. Another remarkable aspect of our retreat was the ongoing laughter that can be heard throughout these recordings, showing a true lightness of heart and mudita, unselfish joy in the Dhamma and in each other. These recordings of the Dhamma talks, Sangha questions, comments, and discussions all bring to life the most remarkable aspect of the Wisdom 1.0 retreat, the simple and direct words of the Buddha, still relevant and still well focused on the Buddha's promised outcome, the end of ignorance and cessation of suffering. Our retreat concluded on Vesak, the day set aside to acknowledge the birth of Siddhartha Gautama and his awakening as a Buddha, a rightly self-awakened one. The talks are in the order they were presented.
Thank you all. I am honored to have you all here and to be your retreat leader for this week, and I don't take that role lightly. I never have. Let me get to the purpose of retreat first, and so I don't have to repeat this after dinner. So we're here, and this is in the book too. We know why we're here. We wanted to put some time aside away from the busyness of our lives and develop our understanding of the Buddha's teachings a little bit more deeply, but also to just relax and have a nice quiet weekend. I'm teaching something that a few people have said that's pretty ambitious to try to do that. But I also pointed out that everybody in this room except James has the book behind them, has taken that course, and that will be able to keep these, that will allow this to be presented in the proper context, I think. And I think James has enough understanding and background to see this. So don't try to take in everything. I doubt more than half of you are going to be fully awakened by Sunday, and the rest of you, you'll have another week to go. So take it easy, take your time, enjoy the weekend.
Kevin says you don't get to leave.
All that the teachings can do is to start pointing our minds in the right direction. That's the refined mindfulness. And always remember, and this was such a help to me. Ananda was the Buddha's cousin, and he was with the Buddha for the last 25 years of his life, heard every teaching the Buddha gave, and yet he didn't fully awaken until a month after the Buddha passed, but he was developing that constantly. And he awakened because he was really upset that they said he couldn't go to the council because he wasn't awakened, and he took to his meditation like he never did before, and bingo, he awakened. He laid the foundation. So the retreat is your time. But make the best of it, and try to stay with the teachings that I'll be giving, but try not to place too much importance on it. Meaning, don't expect that I'm going to give a half hour talk on dependent origination and you're going to have it. It's not that difficult, but it takes time to integrate it. So one of the things that I thought about coming up on a retreat, I never heard the Buddha's teachings. The Buddha awakened to dependent origination. And then he taught the Four Noble Truths as his first teaching, to teach understanding of dependent origination. And then he followed that with the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta about a month later, the teachings on not-self. And about a month after that or so, he taught the Fire Discourse. And if you look at those first three teachings, the Four Noble Truths, in a what's the right word? In a holistic way, really teach impermanence. And you'll understand that a little bit more if you don't really see that now. And then the Buddha taught the not-self characteristic, and then he taught the fire discourse to explain how dukkha, how suffering arises. So in his first three discourses, he taught the three marks of existence, impermanence, anatta, the not-self-characteristic, and the arising of dukkha. It's often not portrayed that way, but that's really what the teachings are about. And I've never seen them presented in a concise, contextual way. So I thought that'd be a great theme for a retreat. So that's why I came up with this idea. I don't expect us to be able to fully assimilate these. These are the basic teachings that the Buddha taught for 45 years. Everything the Buddha taught, he taught in the context of the Four Noble Truths, and to develop understanding of the nature of dukkha and the origination and the proliferation of it. How do we keep it going? How do we keep confusion and delusion going by craving and clinging? But he spent 45 years explaining this in very different ways. But every discourse he gave pointed back to the Four Noble Truths and developing that understanding. So we're gonna explore that this weekend. And we're going to explore it exactly in the same context that the Buddha taught it, one after the other. But he spent 2 months. He didn't have to get it all done in 4 days. So there's the ambitious part. One thing about this, about the context, the Buddha did not teach dependent origination, and as far as anybody can figure out, at least 6 or 7 months, and it's really hard to put a time frame into the Pali Canon just because of the way it's. But it was at least, the scholars agree, it was at least 6 or 7 months after he taught these first three discourses. And it may have been years and years and years. There's just no way of putting that together. The way that they try to put time frames on the Pali Canon when the Buddha might have been given a teaching is who was around him. And then some of it has to do with the words that he used, because his languaging changed over time. And then I think the reason why he didn't teach dependent origination as soon as he awakened as his first teaching is, you need a broader context to make sense of it. Even though it's a pretty straightforward teaching, as you'll see, you need to have a basic understanding of the Buddha's teaching before dependent origination makes any sense. So we'll see how that goes. Tofa is going to be the timekeeper. That's his role. He's going to have the muck tuck. And about 15 minutes before a talk, he's going to hit that thing, and you'll know that it's time. But we're going to keep pretty much the schedule, but that's just to remind you. Try to get here, you know, a few minutes early before the scheduled talks and the other things that are doing. You had that schedule. There were some practical things that I wanted to say, but I can't remember them all now. Tracy?
The movement, where would that be taking place?
It's up to the movement teachers, but I guess if it's nice, it's probably going to be outside.
Yeah, just like right out here in the
We will. We've done it all over, in you know, kind of in here, out there, in the main hall. Oh, I'm looking at Casey. Sorry, Casey.
And he just looks right back at you.
I know. Yeah. 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 Forget Matt.
So why don't we for the mindful movement Tai Chi, why don't you plan on meeting just right out in front of this building? And then you can go back here to the front, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
does that
if
work?
It's raining, we'll be inside. If it's not, we'll do it outside.
Yeah, so you'll, at those times we'll meet out. The dinner schedule is posted too. And we're going to go to dinner shortly at 5 o'clock. It's okay if we get there a little bit later. Tomorrow's class and meditation is going to be in the main meditation hall. And Saturday night's class is going to be in there. That really is a magnificent place. But you see it. You can look in there now if you want. There's something in the back of my mind, but it's not coming out. Talk about concentration. I mentioned before, if you have any dietary considerations that you'd like me to pass on to the kitchen, or you can do it yourself. If there's something that you want, or you want to check something in that might be in the food, just ask them. They're very amenable to whatever we might need. If there's something that comes up that you need addressed as far as a facility, just talk to me or Maura or Matt, and we'll get that taken care of. Getting back to the retreat.
Approach the kimchi.
Yeah. That's this is in your... and the talks that I'll be giving are in this booklet, so if you want to read them first, you don't have to, but... This will, you know, what I'll probably do is read some of it and talk a lot about what I'm trying to say and what I'm trying to teach. But let me just read the purpose of retreat, because it's brilliant writing, and we should.
John, afterwards, I have a few housekeeping rules.
Please. Yeah, oh yeah, and the rules of the facility are in this book too. I think, oh no, I sent it in your email. Some of them are for younger groups than us. like no dancing after 11 o'clock or something. But if you want to. The purpose of retreat is to put aside time and enter a space away from the routine busyness and distractions of day-to-day life. Retreat is a time to take refuge in the Buddha's direct teachings known as the Dhamma, and a like-minded group of Dhamma practitioners, our Sangha. Refuge implies safety and comfort. Taking refuge is not conceptual. Taking refuge in the Buddha means that it is understood that a human being, Siddhartha Gautama, through his own efforts, put all confused and deluded views rooted in ignorance aside and awakened, becoming a Buddha. So it is safe, not delusional, to seek awakening. It's not something that is not achievable. It's not unrealistic. And it's not unrealistic because a human being did it before us. And that human being gave us the teachings. That's the true teachings on the Ratana Sutta and the true teachings on the lineage of the Buddha's teaching. Comfort is taken from knowing that a fellow human being has achieved this task. Awakening, as described by the Buddha, relates directly to the Four Noble Truths and can be seen as four tasks to accomplish. The task associated with the First Noble Truth is to profoundly understand the nature of dukkha. Dukkha describes all manner of unsatisfying human experience, from minor disappointment to severe emotional and physical pain. The quality of mind of confusion and deluded thinking is an aspect of dukkha. Does everybody understand that, at least with a working knowledge of what dukkha means? It's the underlying disappointing nature of life, and it's related to the impermanence of all things and a misunderstanding of self. Mm-hmm. And that's what this whole weekend is about in these first two teachings, are to describe that in a way that's meaningful to us. The task associated with the second noble truth is to develop release from craving and clinging. The entire Buddha's teachings are to bring to cessation craving and clinging and release from suffering in all its manifestations. And what Mark said earlier points to developing the refined mindfulness so that we can first see craving and clinging. We have to acknowledge it. We have to see how it arises in our lives before we can gently abandon it. And so when the Buddha awakened, he sat in meditation off and on, considering, was it possible to actually teach these four truths to humanity? And were people ready to accept them and use them in their lives? And what he was considering was, is there a way to penetrate confirmation bias or conditioned thinking? The common human problem of conditioned thinking. And that's when he came up with or developed the Eightfold Path. So the Eightfold Path is primarily a way of taking our minds that are rooted in the conditioned way of seeing the world. Confirmation bias is another word for that. We're biased towards seeing things that would confirm our own view, even though the truth is staring us in the face, such as the Four Noble Truths. So the Eightfold Path is a way of turning our minds away from that confusion and delusion and keep them focused. And another word for focus is the refined mindfulness that the Buddha teaches. Keep them focused on awakening. Seeing those things that would further our suffering, putting them aside, and keeping our minds well-focused, well-grounded in concentration that we develop in Shamatha Vipassana meditation, so that in this human life we can awaken. And another word for awakening is full human maturity. The Buddha was the first to achieve that, and then he taught us how to do it ourselves. I'm skipping forward just a little bit. During our retreat, put aside as best as you can the moment-by-moment distractions of your life. This does not mean that you should have no thoughts that are associated with your home life. That's unreasonable. When thoughts are distracting you from what is occurring, gently bring your mindfulness to what is occurring here and take refuge in the practical setting of our retreat and the practical theme and focus of our retreat. So when our minds get distracted, we're fooling ourselves that just because we're thinking about something that we can actually affect it when it's 150 miles away or all the way in Seattle or Utah. We can't. As best as you can, keep yourself focused on what's occurring here. Because the more you can develop that, the more you'll be able to do that when you're not here, when you're someplace else. Again, that's an aspect of refined mindfulness. Simply be with what's occurring. We have an incredible facility. We have wonderful people that we're associating with. Be mindful of that. And then be mindful of these simple and direct teachings. Allow the framework of the Eightfold Path to guide your thoughts, words, and actions during our retreat. Right view inclines mindfulness towards the Four Noble Truths in general, and the Eightfold Path specifically. Right intention brings mindfulness to recognizing and gently releasing clinging to objects, events, views, and ideas. Here's the big one for us. Being mindful of right speech, right action, and right livelihood will show where craving and clinging is present while developing useful insight in the ability to gently let go of the three aspects of these aspects of anatta. Mindfulness of right effort, right mindfulness, and right meditation will further integrate and deepen these aspects of your Dhamma practice. A note about the structure of our retreat. So some of you have been on retreats before. Some of you, this is your first one. So if it's your first one, you won't have a little bit of conditioned thinking about what to expect. Many retreats, particularly Buddhist retreats, are taken almost entirely in silence. Ours won't be, and I think for a very good reason. And I've thought about this, not recently, but as I was starting to lead retreats. The Buddha did not teach a one or a twofold path. He didn't say, go and meditate and keep your mouth shut. In fact, he taught right speech, right action, and right livelihood for a very specific reason, to break through conditioned thinking. Right, when we're mindful of right speech, right action, and right livelihood, and let's just talk about right speech, when we're mindful of what's coming out of our mouth, when we're mindful of how we're interacting with each other, in the framework of that, of right speech, we're able to recognize craving and clinging. We're able to recognize where our aberrant mind states are arising from. And it's mostly in our interactions with others that we see that, but also in what we say to ourselves. That's another important aspect of right speech. Be mindful of that story we keep telling ourselves. But as far as a silent retreat, and I'm not against them, I don't think they're as useful as they could be. You cannot develop the usefulness of right speech if you're not speaking. You have to be flapping your gums to know what's coming out of there. But what is also important is to develop a certain level of mindfulness of what's occurring. And so we're going to utilize right speech, meaning noble silence. We're going to utilize noble silence, not right speech during our meals. We'll take our meals in silence. And I think you'll see what a profound effect that has. Because usually, especially if you go to restaurants, you know that eating is more than just having a meal. A lot of it has to do with entertainment. A lot of it has to do with loud entertainment. People talking too loud in restaurants. Sitting quietly, having a meal with a room of other people that are doing the same thing is a profound experience. And I think it very quickly helps us develop an understanding of right speech, because we're in a situation where we would normally be gabbing, we're not. We're being mindful of what's occurring. So I think it's a very useful teaching tool that way. But even though we will be talking outside of meals, be mindful of right speech and engage in right speech. Keep your speech free of gossip. Keep your speech free of any hurtful words towards yourself or another. And I know this group is going to do that easily. Another aspect of right speech is that it's necessary speech, that it has some value in what we're saying. We're not just hearing our gums flap. The reason why that's an aspect of right speech is that we often use speech as a distraction or as entertainment. Be mindful of that. We don't have to be talking all the time. Use this time for it to be quiet. Even if we're in a group of people, we can establish solitude in a group of people too. And we can relate to people on a much more meaningful way when we're mindful of these all tenets of the Eightfold Path. That whole practice is, this whole weekend is an opportunity to deepen our practice of the Eightfold Path, to engage in right speech, right action, and right livelihood, to be mindful of what's coming out of our mouth, to be mindful of where you're walking to, be mindful of what you're telling yourself moment by moment. And I don't mean that in a rigid way. If you find yourself caught up in some wrong speech directed at yourself, recognize it, like Mark was talking about. Recognize it and gently put it aside and come back to what's occurring. The beauty of a retreat is that when we extend our mindfulness to what's occurring, the environment of the retreat helps develop the Eightfold Path. That's the point. There's very little distractions here. If we're mindful of what's occurring, very quickly we're going to see the manifestations of the Eightfold Path in our lives moment by moment. So an awakened human being is no longer developing the Eightfold Path. Their life is an expression of right view, right intention, right speech, action, and livelihood. They're constantly engaged in right effort. They are engaged in that refined mindfulness, and they're well concentrated through a practice of shamatha vipassana meditation within the broader framework. So that's enough of the introductory talk. Welcome you all to your retreat. Any practical questions? Okay, so we're gonna head over to the dining hall and have our meal. And the schedule's here. I think Maura then teaches a mindful movement class.
6:30.
And then we'll be back here.
It's at 7 to 8:30.
7 to 8:30. So the TOEFL will hit the muktuk around 6:45, just to remind us to come back down here. So okay. Thank you.